Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, attorney Craig Mastantuono, guest hosting tonight. And we've got Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, 18th Assembly District Democrat from Milwaukee. Representative Goyke, thanks for joining us again.
Of course.
We had kind of the hit list on the news piece coming into this hour, mentioning
timely.
Both the Brooks trial in Waukesha County, which is going to be something, let's just say, and leave it at that. And then some reference to, was that Kyle Rittenhouse's gun being destroyed? And we can watch that on video, apparently. So when we took the break, we were talking just about the presumption of innocence. And I think that, you know, people who don't practice law in the criminal justice system tend to filter everything when we talk about criminal cases as trials, right? That's why we get the question at the cocktail party, how do you represent somebody if you know that they're guilty? It's like, well, because we plead and plea agree 90 to 95% of the cases that we work on. And we often help those people get through rehabilitation steps, such as alcohol, mm-hmm. other drug abuse, mental health counseling, to address the inadequacies that led to the poor decision-making. And we present those things to the judge at something called a sentencing hearing. And the person is presumed innocent throughout that process too. I want to ask you your thought about what a difference it made to you when you were representing people accused of crime, whether they were wearing orange when they went in front of the judge or whether they came in through the front door, so to speak, in a pair of khakis and a shirt. What difference at these sentencing hearings does it make, have somebody incarcerated or not?
I mean, it is all the difference in not just wearing orange, but wearing handcuffs and ankle shackles that are shackled together. And you can hear the individuals coming into the courtroom before you can see them. And the sound and the sight is jarring. And it's much more likely that an individual that comes into court in custody leaves court in custody than the other way around. And I think sometimes it's easy for people to kind of shrug off this whole thing and say, I would never be there. I would never do anything. And I get that. I'll say one thing to hit this home. If you are arrested tonight, and this is not you, Craig, I know what you do because I know what you would call. But how would you keep your life together? What number do you know by heart without access to your cell phone to call someone to keep your job, to keep your apartment, to get childcare? And if you don't, what happens tomorrow in your life, listener, if you can't keep those connections going or you're not given that phone call or you don't have cash on you to make that contact, it could be 24, 48, 72 hours before you have access to a lawyer and to the outside world. And so it's not just the damage of that sentencing hearing when you come in chains and an orange jumpsuit, but it's that initial 24, 36, 48 hours when a lot of negative things can happen to an individual's life.
Yeah, your whole life can fall apart if you're incarcerated for 48 hours. You can lose your job, and before you know it, you're not able to make the rent payment, right?
And I think that you and I, as we have this conversation, recognize we're not saying that people shouldn't be arrested or incarcerated, but we have to ask the question whether or not the system is working the best that it can. And the challenge with this constitutional amendment, in my eyes, and other legislation that did not pass this year that required mandatory cash bail, is that it systematically disadvantages the already disadvantaged. And while those with advantages and wealth are at a disadvantage, that is substantially less so than poor people that you know don't have those resources at their fingertips.
Yeah, you and I shared the experience, I'm sure, of being very young public defenders and walking back into the bullpens for the first mm-hmm. time, of people awaiting their cases to be called. And these are the people that are in custody and can't make the cash bail that was set. And I, as a 21-year-old law student, was taken aback with the fact that everybody in the bullpen was a person of color. And I do mean everybody. And I just thought, I was a kid in Chicago at the time going to law school and interning at the public defender. And I thought, this can't be right. Why is there 27 black and brown men in this bullpen? And you just got used to it after a while, which is something you really shouldn't get used to.
Yeah, you're talking about a roughly living room size room, light walls, white, cement bench around the interior, one window on the secure door that looks out into a hallway. And like you said, Craig, I mean, a dozen more, two dozen guys sharing that room, waiting all day for their case to be processed so that they can kind of access, see what's going on, get bailed out. I mean, it's a difficult system. And some of that's necessary. I think I have not yet subscribed to abolishing the entire system, but I don't believe, I believe rather that we can make improvements. We can always make improvements and changes.
Well, it sounds like there's efforts underway with this amendment to go the other direction I think that what you're talking about. So can you describe for our listeners what's being proposed and what just got passed?
Yeah, so there is a proposed change to our state constitution regarding bail. Currently, money bail, cash bail, can only be used to assure the appearance in court. Basically, make sure that the defendant's got skin in the game enough so that they're going to come back and make all their court appearances. And this constitutional amendment would change that, and it would say that for certain individuals accused of certain crimes, a court could use cash bail for that, for assuring their appearance, but also they could take into consideration what they're calling public safety, in essence, as defined by the legislature. There's some future questions on this, some kind of unsettled questions on what exactly all the definitions would mean. But basically, what it boils down to is for some individuals, they could be, the judge could use money bail as a way to detain them under the guise of public safety. You fire away, because it's a complicated thing, and the supporters, largely benefit from that complexity, because it's hard to explain why that's not a good idea. And largely, let me just try quickly to say, it isn't a good idea because there's a better, more honest and transparent way to do this. Our federal criminal system that has a courtroom in Milwaukee and in Madison uses a system called pretrial detention, which is a non-money system of holding individuals. If the judge in a federal proceeding says, determines by the evidence that the individual poses a danger, they can be held, they can be detained. And what this amendment is saying is we put a dollar amount on that hold rather than just hold them. And I don't think that's fair. I don't think wealthy people that are dangerous should be able to buy their way out of jail, while poor people that are dangerous cannot. My alternative is, if you're dangerous, you get out, right? I mean, that's it. Let's call it what it is and have a more fair system. And we can argue about the guardrails we put in place to that system and all those definitions, but let's at least agree that using cash bail does not guarantee people get held, because rich people will get out. Kyle Rittenhouse will crowdfund and he'll get out. And that doesn't make us safer.
If you're dangerous, you don't get out, being the standard you're pushing for. And so there's a lot there. So I want to talk about procedure in a moment. In favor of a better system, I think the distinction you're making is right between, if you're rich and dangerous, you shouldn't get out, right? As opposed to, if you're poor and deemed to be dangerous, you shouldn't get out. Because what you're telling our listeners is, under what's being proposed, if you're wealthy, or you can crowdsource, or you attract, the attention of your rich uncle or 57,000 people with $20, you can be as dangerous as you want to be. If you post that bond, you're going to be out on the street, and you could potentially do something to harm the public. And that's why the cash bond system doesn't make rational sense, does it?
And right. You did a much better job summarizing it than I did. And I know that we glossed over several courses in law school and decades of Supreme Court law. But to try to boil it down for listeners, I think, Craig, you've just really nailed it, which is, that the kind of fundamental premise of this constitutional amendment is flawed. And that resulted in my no vote and my opposition. And I think we could have a better, more honest, more transparent system that treats people equally, whether they have money or not.
So what's going on with whether this becomes law? Give us the primer on how this becomes law, these proposals.
Yeah, so a constitutional amendment must pass consecutive legislative sessions and then be ratified via a direct vote by the people of Wisconsin. So this constitutional amendment that we've been talking about has now passed for its first time. That means sometime in 2023 or early 2024, the legislature would have to again approve it in identical fashion. And then after that, either maybe the fall of 24 or the spring of 2025, the voters would have a chance to vote yes or no. And if they vote yes, it would be adopted and be part of our Constitution.
And independent expenditures in favor of that amendment at the time it goes to the public are going to be running pictures of Daryl Brooks and saying if he was held in custody, this would have never happened. And how would it be possible to challenge that in the public debate?
I think that's right. And on the other side will be me and you having this long talk about the you know, and while you know, we like us, you know, it's hard, it's complicated. And I think, you know, it is not new. Tough on crime politics sells. It's been used at times by both parties, you know, over the last couple of decades. And you know, this certainly fits that narrative well. And so you can kind of see the playbook that lies in front of us on the in front of the state in this constitutional amendment.
Yeah, it's an oldie but a goodie, isn't it? Using the criminal justice system as kind of a cudgel to, you know, enact laws, because it's so easy to say dangerous person, you know, usually, and I'm sorry to say it, but usually insert, you know, person of color image here, going all the way back to Willie Horton, you know, and equals you should be afraid. And half the time, people paying for that type of ad really want deregulation of environmental standards for big business, but they're willing to support candidates that use the criminal justice system to scare the heck out of people, make changes in our laws that a couple of things about that. Is there studies that you do at the legislative level that talk about how much money this is going to cost, and studies that later come back and talk about the return on this investment in our exploding jail populations if we pass a law like this?
No, there's no studies or anything that's required or presented. I mean, there are arguments that are made, and there are advocacy groups and legislators and sometimes think tanks that point out the costs, but no. And I think to your point, you know, we debate and we pass. There's no mechanism in this amendment or in these other criminal bills that ever kind of checks whether it works or not, right? There's no mechanism that says 2 years or 5 years from enactment, if it's not doing what it's supposed to do, it'll go away. That's up to future legislatures. And I have been elected for 9 years. Over that time, we've, you know, enacted, I don't know, 50 new crimes or penalty enhancers, and we've never gone the other way. Now, you know, not even on marijuana, as other states are doing. So it's a one-way street. Once you can't unring the bell, and that's a real challenge. So we add crimes, we add felonies, we add penalties, and there really is no mechanism to go the other way.
Yeah, I used to practice in front of a Waukesha judge that said, you know, there should be a requirement that every time they add a criminal law to the books, they have to remove one from the books, because that's the only way that it'll be something that happens. You know, let me just ask you one real basic question. Is what I said true? Is if there was a different system in place, Mr. Brooks wouldn't have been released, or was this the subject of an error and not the system itself?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, right? We don't know. Right.
The DA said it was an error, right? The DA said, hey, so I guess that's my question. Under the current system, was there a way to hold Mr. Brooks in custody?
We don't know, because we don't know how much he could have paid, right? I mean, on a money bail system, you know, who knows? I don't know what his relatives could have come up with or what he had.
That's true. But if the DA had asked for $50,000 and, you know, that you've been in these bond hearings, yeah. the judge split the difference and it was $25,000 rather than, what was it, 2,500 or 5,000 that he posted?
I think it was 1,000.
Oh, right.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's a chance that that holds him. But as we debate this, we don't know that. And making the decisions, you know, what is the judge supposed to do? Ask him, how much can you come up with? 5,000? Okay, 5,001 is your bail, right?
Right.
That really isn't, we aren't having a debate about what the actual facts are and whether the person poses a risk. At that point, it's a financial determination. And I don't think that's the best system. I don't think it's fair or transparent.
Evan, I'm going to ask you to join us real quick on the other side before we end the show, but I'm going to throw it out there that I think if they asked for 50 grand and 25 grand was the bond, Mr. Brooks never gets out and the current system's not being attacked as vehemently as otherwise. But we'll pick that up on the other side and talk about that a little bit and bring the show to a close.